You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 29th, 2017. And this week, George and I take a deep breath and get wild with Link.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alvord.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a site dedicated to the serious but not humorous conversation about video games. And today, we're starting on Travel Journal
of sorts.
We are doing our first debrief for Breath of the Wild. This is a big game. Like many, many hours. I saw someone online saying they had put in 100 plus hours into the game.
Yep.
And they were like, oh, I don't really want it to end yet, so I'm just going to keep playing.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to do in Breath of the Wild.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that this is a pretty good candidate for breaking up a bunch of conversations as we play it.
Both
good. Because I suspect it will take us a long time to beat. But also, Legend of Zelda, as an open world game, is even itself unique in that it really lets you go pretty much anywhere right off the bat.
Yep.
And that amount of freedom, even compared to something like Horizon Zero Dawn, which I'm playing now,
mm-hmm.
is built for storytelling. Like, there are things that I've seen that you probably haven't seen and vice versa.
For sure, yeah.
Or weird, like, emergent things going on, right? And we'll get to some of the mechanics in this debrief because it's our first time talking about it, and I think it'll be interesting to see your thoughts based mm-hmm. upon your love of the franchise. I don't have the same sort of background in Zelda that you do, but I still think it's super interesting to see how far along this game has come. And so hopefully this is the first time we're talking about it, but we'll have at least two, three, four more Breath of the Wild conversations.
Oh, yeah.
So with that in mind, I do want to give a minor spoiler caveat. There are certain shrines or certain early game moments in particular that
this is one of the hardest games to not spoil.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. Yeah. Because there are locations that you might not visit until 20, 30, 40 hours into the game.
Yep.
That we might spoil, and those might actually be really cool or interesting moments. So I do want to give a chance for people who are very sensitive to spoilers to back out. That being said, there isn't, you know, at least for me, I'm kind of taking my time. I'm taking a certain approach to the game.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not barreling through the story. We're not going to be spoiling any major narrative twists or turns.
I mean,
well, other than maybe one of the first big ones.
Yeah, one of the first reveals, but I mean, probably the most traditional part of this game is that, yo, dog, guess what? Zelda's trapped in this castle.
Oh, no. Ganon is back.
I mean, you know what's going to happen at the end. So yeah.
But where does this fit into the timeline, Scott?
Fuck, don't even get us started on that. this game has reopened that whole timeline.
Well, I read something that was saying this. Some people consider this a hard reboot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I read, or maybe it was a video. I watched a video of the developers saying that they prototyped this game with original Legend of Zelda assets.
Yeah. How cool is that?
Yeah.
I think it was in the GDC talk, right?
Yeah, that was it. It was the GDC talk.
Which is online, by the way. So if you want to watch that YouTube GDC talk, mm-hmm. you can.
I mean, but I think that is a good place to start because after hearing that, everything about this game clicks into place.
Oh, really?
Having played the first Legend of Zelda on NES, this is probably the closest to that.
Okay, so I've never played The Legend of Zelda on the mm-hmm. NES. Why is that? Is it like the systems in place? Is it themes or story?
I mean, I think it's the design philosophy. In the first Legend of Zelda, you're given a sword and mm-hmm. you get out on the map and that's it. You're on the map. It doesn't tell you where to go. It doesn't tell you what to do. It doesn't tell you what items are used for what things. It's just like, all right, here it is.
Yeah. In fact, I think I have played a little bit of it, and I stopped because I forgot to pick up the sword.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck? Why am I dying all the time?
It's a hard game, too. Like, you can walk in one direction, and then you'll start fighting these enemies that are way too hard for you.
Yeah.
But there's no tutorial in it. There's nothing. There's not even a sense of how many dungeons there are.
Yep.
Like, how many pieces of the Triforce do I need to get? You know,
right.
They don't want to tell you anything. And this game is very similar, where there's shrines, but you have no clue how many shrines there are.
Yeah, how many per area, yeah.
There's these little Korok seeds. Who knows how many of those there are in the world? It just, after a very brief, but I think pretty elegantly done bottleneck part, it opens up and it's like, right, start walking.
Good luck.
Yeah. And it was, it's very reminiscent to that in a modern context.
What, a while back, we had a conversation about Dark Souls as a genre.
Mm-hmm.
And while I don't necessarily, I wouldn't call Breath of the Wild a Souls-like.
I was actually thinking about that when I was doing some stuff in here. And I mean, I was like, man, this might fit into our series of
So let's talk about that a little bit. Because there's one way that it is Souls-like. Combat, in certain scenes in particular, feel very Souls-like.
Yeah.
So, for example, I discovered a shrine yesterday. And I went into it. And instead of a puzzle scenario, it was like a moderate strength check or something like that. And... one of the guardian, the four-legged octopus-looking guys that shoot lasers out of their eyeballs, spawned in the center of the room, and I had to defeat them. And it was one single boss fight, and I was clearly under-leveled. Like, my weapons just weren't doing very much damage.
Yeah.
And so I started engaging this fight, and I decided, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to stick it out. I'm going to eat, like, all this food that I've cooked over many hours to fight this thing. And because it was a one-on-one thing, it did start to slowly feel like a Souls boss.
Yeah.
And the fight evolved, right? So as the boss started losing health, its attack patterns changed.
Oh, okay.
And so I started getting a little bit further, and then I died, but I learned something. And then I went back, and I got a little bit further, and I died, but I learned something, right? And eventually, when I finally beat it, I had gone through like four stages.
Yeah.
First, it was targeting me with laser beams. Then it would do a charge attack. And I was specifically setting it up to like bash these pillars so that it was staggered and I could go in and get a few hits and then back out again.
Right.
And so it was this rinse, wash, repeat learning process that was very Soulsborne-like and very satisfying for that reason.
Because
I felt like I was really putting in the effort and thinking about it.
Yeah.
You know? And I can't, I mean, again, I haven't played as many Zelda games as I have in the past, but it wasn't the type of boss fight that I think about when I think about Zelda games, you know?
Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is accurate, right? I think to some extent, while maybe it doesn't owe a strong allegiance to Soulsborne, and in fact, the Soulsborne franchise probably owes a bigger allegiance to Zelda than anything else, it feels like a type of game that is very modern in the sense that it's okay for this type of game to be out again, you know?
Yes.
Like, it feels like people are ready again for an adventure game of this size that doesn't bother telling you how to go about, you know, expanding or learning about the world, per se, and that is, in fact, really brutally difficult at times when you might least suspect it.
Yeah, I think that has been a... there's been kind of a subculture of people who play Dark Souls because... they remember, oh, right, this is what games like Legend of Zelda used to be like.
Right.
And the joke always was, well, the best Zelda game to have come out in the past 10 years has been Dark Souls. And so now it's looping back to the original spirit of the game, which is why people like me are so appreciative of it. I think there's... I'm trying to remember the last Zelda game. Because I didn't play the Nintendo DS one that was kind of a...
Spirit Tracks?
No. There was a one after called The Link Between Worlds.
Oh, yeah.
And it was not quite a reboot, but it was an homage. There were some overlapping elements with A Link to the Past. But it had a similar experimental vibe in that you had to basically purchase items for in different scenarios. Like, you didn't always have your full suite of items. You was like, okay, for this thing I probably want a boomerang and my lantern and whatever. And so they had to design the game in such a way that you could accomplish your tasks with any type of combination of weapons. And it was still a more traditional Zelda game in terms of how it led you down the paths, but it almost feels like they were emboldened and went fully in the other direction with this one, which is, we're just going to give you a limited number of items. We're going to give them to you almost immediately. And then we're just going to say, figure it out with whatever combination you like to use. Which is the exact opposite of the last mainstream Zelda game, which was Skyward Sword, which I think is
where
probably
you unlock each one in order.
And it was probably the worst Zelda game I've ever played, like bar none. So like, we're swinging from the worst Zelda game ever made to arguably the best. I mean, I'm very close to saying this is probably the best Zelda game ever made.
I mean, it's the fourth best game of all time, according to Metacritic. I mean, I think you're right. And I'm almost jealous of people who do have this affinity to Zelda. Because I've seen some people talking about this game, and it's clear like they're emotional about it. They're like, I'm able to relive something that I've never seen before, or I haven't seen in years. Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel like a kid again.
Yeah.
And we talked about the same idea when we were talking about the Switch release,
mm-hmm.
and how if you're a young kid who's maybe heard of Zelda but never really played it,
yeah.
and you pick up the Switch and it's like your birthday or some shit, right? And like you pick up Breath of the Wild, this could be that game for kids like 20 years from now. Like one day there will be a game designer who's like, oh, I knew I was into gaming because I played Breath of the Wild and it changed my life.
Yeah.
And that's pretty remarkable. Yeah. I mean, I don't think my life per se is changing because of Breath of the Wild, but there's a magic that is like undoubtedly in here when you're playing through it.
Yeah.
And it appears in like certain moments, right? Like the other night I was like traveling through the woods or whatever, mm-hmm. and I saw like a blue rabbit.
Oh yeah.
And
I saw that. I saw one of those things, but it ran way too fast.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, what is that? Yeah. I wonder if I could like pick it up or something. Yeah. So I chased it and it disappeared.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I like fast traveled or something, mm-hmm. and it loaded the screen, and on the load screens it had tips.
Oh yeah.
And the tip was like, some hear legend of a blue rabbit, or if you kill it, you get a massive reward. And I was like, motherfucker. And then I saw that same rabbit like several more times, and I tried to kill it and I missed like both times. But to know that like, oh, there's something here. There's something unspoken and cool and mysterious that I can find.
Yeah.
And then to like learn about it and get those hints is super satisfying. It's just, it feels like I'm in a world that isn't super handcrafted and feels really natural.
Yeah.
You know, like you will find encounters that were crafted for sure, but it feels like they were sort of naturally placed. And if you want to go at it by, you know, climbing a big tree and then throwing bombs or something, then you can. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to go in with your knife swinging, you can. Or if you want to get into your paraglider and then jump out and like shoot a bow or whatever, you can. Like there's all these different ways to approach that combat. And so it feels like a natural thing. Like if you bump into the random enemies like chasing a boar, right? And they're like, you can see them in almost like Pratt comedy, like futilely chasing a pig in circles. You could just throw a grenade and like kill a pig, and then they're super like at one point I threw a grenade, I killed the pig, so the pig dropped meat.
Oh yeah.
And then they immediately picked up the meat and started eating the meat. And then I was like, okay, they're distracted, so I went in and stealthed and then did like a stealth attack on them. And it was just such a weird turn of events that, you know, it didn't have to go that way, but it felt like such a natural thing to do.
I think that's because this game has gotten so much praise, it's easy to just blow past like why people actually like it. But I think that anecdote is why, because there is almost like a Far Cry 2-esque level, or like a Spelunky-esque type level of mechanical interaction.
I mean, the lighting things on fire alone, I mean, owes so much to Far Cry, right?
And so it has this balance of extremely dense mechanics that all interact with each other without much hand-holding, but just enough world-crafting to put you in interesting situations. And it does that right away. Like, you're not getting to these points 20 hours in.
Yeah.
You're getting to these points 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
And on top of that, there's this level of this hard to quantify or hard to illustrate level of just Nintendo polish on everything. Yeah. It's like, oh, okay, this is Far Cry 2, but there's some smart things about this where people aren't respawning every five seconds.
Yeah.
Only
when the blood moon rises.
Which is great, because then it makes it even weirder, you know? Yeah. Like, there was a lot of things where it's rare that you find a Nintendo game that seems so explicitly influenced by the broader world.
Yeah.
All the crafting in this game
is
nuts.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't tell you anything.
No.
Like, I had no idea how to... So I was roaming the world, and I had a bunch of like meat in my bag.
Yeah.
Like raw meat. And I'm like, I don't think Link should be eating raw meat.
I get one heart off of this.
So I saw a bonfire, and I was like, I wonder if I could just like throw it in there. So I held the items.
Yeah.
I threw them into the fire. They lit up and changed into like charred steak.
Yeah.
And it was great. And I ate it. And then I put in some mushrooms and I let it burn, because I was like, I wonder if you can burn it. And then it just disappears into ash if you leave it in the fire too long. But like, you know, the fact that I wanted to see, oh, will this thing work?
Yeah.
And it does,
mm-hmm.
you know, it feels so natural. And I should say, I think that Nintendo is really lucky that they can create a world in this recognized universe that is Zelda.
Yeah.
And not have to carry a lot of the baggage or the feature creep that I think a lot of other open world games do.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again, a caveat, because technically I work for Ubisoft, but there's a lot of Ubisoft open world games that are great, but carry the baggage of having to be in the real world.
Yeah.
And it, when things are too gamey in those spaces, it breaks the fiction of that world.
Mm-hmm.
Or because it's a real world, they have to adhere to certain rules, right? In a way that Zelda doesn't have to do.
Like,
they can just throw meat on an open flame.
Yeah.
But you're never going to have that type of moment in a game that says there are cars and there are politics involved and there's all these like people here, you know? Like, so there's a level of like fun that Nintendo is allowed to have in the space that a lot of other people can't.
Yeah.
And that's even true of the survival elements of the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of games that are just the cooking and crafting scenario, it feels like.
Yeah.
Where, yeah, you can die if you're out in the cold for too long. And so you have to figure out how to like harvest sheep, to get wool, to build a sweater, to go into the winter, you know? And then it becomes very serious, and that process becomes really like heavy and strategic, and you end up having to do all this heavy lifting to get to the point where you can survive, right? But it's a light enough touch on all of those things that it avoids boredom. It avoids a lot of the just the kind of shitty micromanagement that comes with those elements.
The point is not that this isn't The Long Dark, where the whole point of the game is to survive.
Yeah.
But it's, you will die. Exactly.
Like,
yeah, it's an adventure game with survival elements, not a survival game where you go on an adventure.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking a lot about just the broader ecosystem. Like, I was thinking about all of the survival games that we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go on Steam and there's 50 new survival games a day, and thinking about what they chose to bring into Breath of the Wild and what they left out and how they chose to bring it in.
Yeah.
So, for example, have you found any item that allows you to record recipes yet?
No.
Me neither.
No. Do you think, does it exist?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's funny because you can hover over a food item.
Yeah.
And it'll say what went into it.
Yeah. But if you eat it, then it's like, well, I hope you remembered what you put in there because you ate it.
Yeah. Can you imagine like if you were cooking and like, fuck, I don't know how to make spaghetti and meatballs anymore because I ate all of my spaghetti and meatballs.
And I forgot how many meatballs I put in this.
Yeah. How much meat do I put in?
But the other thing too is if you combine steak and pepper, you get, you know, spicy flank steak, or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you put more peppers in, you get more cold resistance.
Yeah.
So you have to think about, okay, was it too spicy last time? Did I put in three or four peppers?
Yeah.
How long do I actually need?
There were times like I ended up finding the bulls, and you can kill a bull to get like a prime cut of meat.
Yeah.
And so I was cooking up meat and I was like, I wonder if I could make this like really meat heavy. So I put like four slabs of prime meat and some herbs. I wanted to see what I got. And what you get is this like a hearty skewer of meat, but it recovers like 10 health.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy crap, I really overdid it. I could have stretched this meal out, you know? Like, I could have had four steaks, because I only have, like, four hearts right now.
Oh, yeah.
So I could have, like, stretched it out, but instead I dumped it all. But that itself is so fun, because you never really know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
Like, I tried to make an omelet, and I was like, I got eggs, let's see what happens. Or I met a guy who was selling milk and butter.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
I've never met that guy yet.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. I've never seen anybody. Yeah. I can't find milk and butter on the road. So I bought all of the milk and butter. And
That's the other thing. They only have limited amounts of supplies.
Right.
So you're thinking to yourself,
When am I going to find the milk guy?
Exactly. What, maybe this guy's going to walk off a cliff or something. Yeah, I better buy him out.
Well, and then my other thought was like, I don't have many rupees. I literally spent like all my hard-earned money on milk and like the dairy aisle, essentially, just like real life, to be fair. And I was like, okay, let's see what happens. So I had two eggs.
Mm.
So I put two eggs and I put some butter and I put like one meat and it made an omelet. And I was like, this is fucking great. So let's put one egg and like two meats and some butter. And like I got a different dish.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, this makes sense. There wasn't enough eggs to really make an omelet.
Yeah, the ratio was off. So you were
so
like,
so instead it's like a sauce mixture. Like, I mean, it sounds silly, but I think this is just as satisfying as cooking food in Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a joy of seeing what I make and just throwing random shit in there. And sometimes that's like monster parts and I get this like disgusting gruel that you can still eat for one health, you know, like
it's pixelated.
Yeah. It's just kind of fun to play around even with crafting, because I know that it's not that serious.
Yeah.
And no matter what food you combine, it's going to be better than what you put in.
Right.
Because, you know, eventually when you've got 4, 5, 6 hearts, you're going to want a meal that restores a lot of it instead of like an apple.
Which you don't want to have to eat like 5. But there are times where I'm out in the wild and I've gone through all my prepared food. Yeah. So I'm just eating raw apples.
Yeah. Oh, dude. I mean, I got to a point. So after that boss fight, yeah. I'd eaten all of my food and then I was getting in a fight and I was like just shoving like uncooked mushrooms in my face. And I just felt so disgusting, which is so... It fits so well, right? Because yeah. I've gotten to this point where I was comfortable with what I'd gotten and, yeah. and how I've evolved.
Yeah.
And then because, and I guess this is a good segue to the way that weapons degrade and break in this game as well. Also Far Cry.
Yeah.
Because they degrade, I felt like a savage all of a sudden. I was like, man, I'm fucking useless right now. I've got no food. I'm like whacking things with a fucking, like a bone arm. It's just garbage weapons, right?
Yeah.
So instead I'm running away and like trying to throw bombs at people and stuff. It's cool. It's really cool the way that you sort of naturally evolve and discover and then forget and lose things only to rediscover them. Mm-hmm. And that even that act of rediscovery, I think, is really rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess from there, I am interested to hear about the first few hours, you know, after you get off the plateau. You start on the plateau, you go through a series of dungeons that gives you your core set of items.
Yeah. There's like one weird old guy.
Yeah. And then you leave the plateau and the rest of the game opens up.
Mm-hmm.
So you got off the plateau. What'd you do?
I did.
Yeah.
The plateau, I should say, is really cool too, because they don't tell you how to survive in the cold.
Yeah.
And I ended up like discovering how to cook spicy food.
Oh, okay.
But you can also, I guess, find certain things to exchange for a sweater.
So yeah, I read that old man's diary and he talks about, well, I made a cool dish the other day, and it helped me stay warm on the mountain. And then the next day's diary entry was, oh no, I didn't write down the recipe, and now I can't remember. It was something with fish and meat and something. Yeah. And so I found some fish and some, I guess, where did I get the meat from? I must have got it from a fox or something like that.
Or a goat or something?
Yeah.
You can get it from birds, too.
Yeah. And then peppers, and I created a dish and then I gave it to him.
And it was
he was
the
like,
dish?
Oh my God, this is great. This is the thing. And then he gave me this woolen tunic.
See, I tried that, but my dish didn't have fish in it. I was just like, maybe he'll like it because it's warm.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, that wasn't it.
Yep.
Or something like that.
Gotta have the fish. The
and
secret
so
recipe.
I said, fuck this guy. I don't know where to get fish. I cooked spicy food myself, survived long enough to get to the top of a really tall mountain.
Yeah.
And he was there.
Oh.
And I got to the shrine.
Hmm.
And he was like, oh, as a reward for making it, here's a sweater. And he gave me
nice.
The tunic.
Yeah, nice.
It was pretty cool.
And you take a lot of damage when the environment is against you.
Oh, you will die, like, almost instantly.
Yeah. And I've played for a while. I haven't officially done one of the four main dungeons, but I've played for a while.
Are there main dungeons?
My understanding is those four beasts.
Oh.
Each represents a dungeon.
I have been so distracted by shrines.
Yeah.
Like, I see a shrine in the distance, and I'm like, I could probably sneak my way over there.
And it's like 5 hours later.
There's like huge behemoths. Yeah.
Yeah.
So finish the plateau.
Yeah.
And then I immediately just started heading to, like, dungeons and the things that poked out of the sky.
Okay.
So I've mapped maybe, like, four other regions.
Oh, wow.
Besides the plateau.
Okay.
Just because you can climb the tower. Most of the enemies kill me pretty quick, and I just sort of like hide and sneak past them so as not to waste resources.
But have you encountered one of the rock golems yet?
No.
Oh, man.
What are these rock golems? And which region do I avoid to not...
It was pretty close to the plateau.
Did you go like northwest?
I went to Kakariko Village, which I think is east.
Yeah, it's like northeast. So I did go there. I've recently been there. Yeah.
Well, and then after that, I continued further east. I ran across the horse stables.
Oh yeah, so I found that as well. I got my horse. I named her Lulu. She's a beautiful mare.
Cool. I named her. I got thrown off of a cool horse, but I captured a shitty horse that I named Chad.
Chad is a perfect name for a shitty horse.
And then I continued heading east. And eventually got to some wild places.
Oh, really?
Some like windswept cliffs. I found an old one of the bird people, one of the Ritu.
Bird people.
Yeah,
I haven't seen them at all. I saw one shark guy.
Okay, I have not seen any shark guys yet. Mm. And anyway, so we'll go on to where we go afterwards. But I only have 4 hearts.
Yeah, same here.
And
I have 1 stamina meter.
Yeah, same here.
Okay.
Same here. And haven't really done much with any of the cooler equipment. Like, I have my tunic and that's pretty much it.
So I did a shrine, that mm-hmm. shrine where I beat the enemy, and it gave me like a fat shield and an awesome sword.
Oh, nice.
But that was after I found the fairy lady, and I don't remember where the fairy lady is.
Oh.
Because she'll, like, give you better gear or something.
I think there's multiple fairy ladies, because I found one, but I didn't have enough money to help her.
Oh, yes. You gotta pay her.
Which, by the way, rupees, they're finally valuable. Dude. Like,
yeah.
It took me a long time to even get up to, like, 50 rupees.
They're not in pots.
Yeah.
They're not in tall grass.
Yeah.
Have you fought assassins yet?
From the Yiga tribe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. I found one of them.
So two of them. Now I'm like hesitant to talk to people on the road because I'm like, this guy's probably a fucking asshole. He's gonna try to kill me. And I fought two of them, and each of them dropped exactly 1 rupee.
And you're like, oh, precious rupee. What is this
bullshit? Like 1 rupee for like defeating this fucking assassin is the worst.
On my travels, I kept on traveling. So I feel like I've only officially mapped maybe 1 or 2 regions.
Oh, really?
Because I just couldn't find another tower. So I've been in the wilderness. Like, I cannot find another tower for the life of me. And I've just been marking things on my map to, like, remember where they are. And I like
the stamp system. I think that's... Yeah. I really like that it doesn't flood the map with icons. Like, you have to do that yourself.
Yeah.
Which is actually similar to the recipe thing, except for in real life, right? Like, you really have to put in the work.
I mean, I think this is where... You mentioned the Ubisoft. I mean, the Ubisoft games have quietly been probably some of the most influential games of the past decade.
Oh, yeah. For open world genre in particular. Yeah.
But they've gotten to the point where you open up an Assassin's Creed map and it's like, blah!
Yeah.
And it's like, holy crap, there's all this stuff here. Whereas there's just as much stuff in Zelda, but they don't mark it on the map.
Yeah. Well, I think importantly, though, there's a big difference, right? And I think, again, like, there's a burden that Nintendo doesn't have to carry because a city must be populated.
Yeah.
Whereas I think one of the strong suits of Breath of the Wild is how empty and vast it is.
Yeah.
And how, like, you could just be on the lonely road, like, riding your horse for a good long while and, man, you know, seeing the scenery. And I should say, we're both playing on the Wii U.
Mm-hmm.
I still think the game is fucking gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, it looks great. I mean, the frame rate is unfortunate, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So having that openness means you can spread out some of those important points. And because the game wants you to go at your own pace, there's no need to, like, mark everything on the map. Because if you miss a shrine or whatever, you can come back to it. You can mark it later.
Yep, yep. And that's what I've been doing with, especially with those bosses that I can't beat. So I was walking
around. What are these?
The rock.
the rock guys.
So okay. I was walking around.
So they are hostile to you.
Minding my own business, and all of a sudden, a boulder stands up. An entire boulder stands up with
I can't wait.
With legs and arms and instantly one-shots me. Just swings, dead. He's like,
oh my God.
Barely anything. And I actually go back and try to fight it a couple times, but I have shitty weapons. It's doing like a tiny amount of damage each time I hit it. And so
do you think, like,
I mark it on the map with a skull and run away.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Do you think that maybe, like, a water weapon would work? Like, if
is this Pokemon rules? I don't know.
I mean, I know that. So, like,
I found a fire sword.
Oh, really?
I found this crazy sword that shoots a flamethrower out of it, and then it recharges after a while. Yeah.
I found the boomerang.
Oh, my God. The fucking boomerang. The classic. Hilarious.
Yeah, it's so funny because it's essentially useless.
Yeah, because, like, I was like, oh, sweet. A boomerang. Zelda. I get this. And I threw it. And then it comes back. And you have to catch it.
I love that you have to catch it.
Yeah.
I hate that when you hit something with it, it does not come back to
you.
Yeah,
like a boomerang.
Like a real boomerang.
And I was like, I'm going to throw this at the wall. And it's like, thunk, boom. Like,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, now okay. Now I'm running after my boomerang like an asshole. Which, by the way, I remember the first time I used a boomerang in real life as a kid. And I had that same reaction. Because I thought,
it comes back at you and you're like, ah, duck.
No. I was like, oh, this is going to be sweet. Threw a boomerang. It just flies away.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't come back.
This is a useless toy.
And so that is probably an encapsulation of how far afield they've gone from the normal Zelda game.
Yeah.
Where you not only have to find a boomerang. It's not a core item. It can also break.
Yep.
You have to catch it when you throw it.
I love that.
And at first, when I didn't catch it, it started like sliding down the hill. So I was like running after.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, yeah. So you've gone northeast.
Yeah.
I've decided to go a little bit south. And so I got to the ocean.
Oh, okay.
And I saw something online once that was like, you can take a sword
mm-hmm.
and you can use your magnet. to grab it and then push it against the boat to drive the boat like a motor, essentially, instead of using the wind.
I should do that because I found one of the Korok leaves.
Here's the thing. Yeah. I dropped the weapon and it immediately fell off the boat and sunk into the sea. And it was a pretty good weapon. And I was like, motherfucker, I'm never going to do this again.
Yeah, I found one of the leaves.
Yes, and is a much better method.
I didn't even know about the magnet motor, but so it on the eastern side of the map, there's also another ocean.
Oh, really?
So okay. I hit the water, and there just so happened to be. It was weird. Like there was a little camp. Like there was clearly a tent there. Someone had been there.
Environmental storage.
Yeah, and there was a boat, and I was like, "Well, I'm gonna take this boat." And so I just went off into an island and found some treasure there. And then I kept on going on this island that was pretty far out. And in the distance, I see this like really big figure walking around on the island. And
like
I was
a like, giant?
Yeah, I was like, man, what the fuck is that?
Was it a cyclops?
It was not a cyclops, but I have found a cyclops before. It was huge. It was sleeping. And I
How big are we talking?
Several links tall.
Okay.
By the way, I tried to jump onto the cyclops, but it woke up and then one-shotted me.
So I did the same thing. Yeah. I wonder if this is the same island.
No, this is a different island. So this is not the Cyclops Island. This was a different island. So first, before I saw the huge figure, I found two treasure chests, each with 300 rupees in it.
What?
And I was like, oh,
see, this one, I wish you could like share your map with me. Yeah. And be like, George, there's some fat loot. Because that would be amazing. I mean, we've seen shops that are like, oh, this is 1,200 rupees. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Did you go to, I think it's called Hatena?
Yeah, the village.
Yeah, the village. So there's a house that you can buy there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can I get married in the game?
I mean, it's this. If there was a place, this is the place to do it.
I mean, there is a sense in Breath of the Wild that anything is possible until you confirm that it's not.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm back at this island. I find my 600 rupees. I'm feeling great. And then I see this thing in the distance. And the grass is kind of obscuring it. So like, I crouch down, turn on my scope, and I see what it looks like. So it's the head of a lion.
Oh my god.
So it has like a mane chimera. And stuff. Yes. The body is human-like, so it has arms like a crazy six-pack. And I was like, man, this thing's weird. It's also moving really strangely. So I like get to a higher ground to
scope it out.
Its body is like a centaur, a horse.
What?
So it's this huge lion man horse beast that's patrolling this island.
Man bear pigs.
And then as I'm looking at it, it turns around and a question mark pops over it. So I'm like, oh no. Time to go. And then I start running. And as I'm turning around, I see it raise its sword up and it starts to glow green. And then a huge green lightning bolt kills me instantly.
Holy shit.
And I was like, well, I guess I'll mark this with a skull and come back later.
That's amazing.
And so I was like, I don't know what this is. I don't know how it got there. All I know is I took a boat to an island that is guarded by a huge beast.
See, I'm actually glad that we're sharing our stories because eventually I'm going to find it. I'm going to see that guy and I'm just going to like peace out. So I found an island that I thought was really cool. So when you get to the island, and I jumped off my boat, immediately the text that appears when you're in a shrine showed up, and it's basically like, hey, I'm going to take all of your gear to test you, you will only get it back if you can deposit like the three balls in their place.
Okay.
And then it lets you go. And it's basically like Survivor or something, right? Like they take all of your shit. And they say, look, this is a tiny, it's almost like a tiny version of the entire game.
Oh, okay.
Because there's enough on the island to survive. Mm-hmm. There's like swords, but first you have to do all of the basic stuff. Like, okay, so you found a branch, use the branch to like kill these guys, use your bomb to blow up grenades, get a better weapon, attack the camp, get the thing.
Yeah.
And there's a giant, there's like a cyclops on the island. And one of the balls is on a necklace around his neck.
God damn it.
So I was like, okay, I'm going to fight this guy. I'm going to see what happens, right? And this is after I'd already died like 10 times. This is literally where I'm at right now because I'm committed to fucking beating this test. Because I could have more health for sure, so I might end up leaving. But theoretically, you should be able to do it because everything that you need to do
all the tools are there.
They're on the island.
Yeah.
So I wake up this sleeping cyclops and I'm like, okay, maybe if I chop down one of these trees, the tree will land on it and I'll do some damage. So I chop the tree down and I miss. And then the cyclops stops and he picks up the tree and whacks me with it and like one-shots me. I gave him a weapon because I thought I could like be clever and chop this tree down. It's incredible because I'd never expected something like that to happen. No. And then it does. And now I'm like, okay, well.
And it also makes perfect sense. It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. That's totally logical and within the bounds of this game.
So now my new plan is on the island, it storms more often. Mm. So I'm like, maybe if I just put a bunch of metal around him, he'll get electrocuted.
Yeah.
Or so for another thing, there are creatures on that island that are green and give out electricity.
Oh, yes. The chews.
Oh, I haven't seen those yet. So this is my first time seeing them.
Okay.
And so I...
There's different color chews. There's blue ones. There's ice ones.
I've only ever seen the water ones and the fire ones.
Okay.
So these lightning ones are there. They're very large. I
haven't seen the fire one.
So I dropped a weapon, and then I used the magnet and brought it over. And because they're always giving off electricity, it ricocheted to the weapon and then to the other goblins in the area.
Nice.
So I just killed them that way.
God.
It's such amazing. A clever... And it's crazy because there's no way you could have told me that this type of emergent experiences would have been in this game. I would not have expected it.
I mean, you wouldn't have believed it based off of the other stuff that Nintendo has done with their games recently. And then all of a sudden they bust out with this from out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's crazy, man. So mostly south, what were you saying, southwest?
Mostly southeast.
Southeast.
So I am going to eventually...
Oh, I'm heading down to where you are because I started up...
Oh, and then worked your way down.
Yeah.
So I am going to go back to the main mission now. I want to go meet the sexy shark man that everyone's talking about. Yes. So that's my first goal.
Yeah.
Once I defeat this island, back up, and then we'll see where we go from there.
Yeah, that's... I need to find more towers because ever since I went on this
crazy quest,
I'm in emptiness, and I've been trying to hug the coastline, and I finally found a beach that allowed me enough purchase to get up the cliff, and I had to climb this huge mountain where it's never been colder. Like, it was colder than it was.
Oh, on the other
It went deeper into the negative.
So I've seen a mountain that looks really high up and cold, and I want to go there.
I don't know. Maybe that was the one. But that was the one where all of a sudden I heard a wolf. And then I turned around, and there were fucking wolves.
Oh my God. And all of a sudden you're Liam Neeson from The Gray. Yeah.
And it was because
Link just puts on a sharpened glass around his hands.
That wolf fucked me up. I didn't die from it, but it would take three hearts per hit. And so eating things. Readying my bow and arrow and just taunting it to charge at me and shooting it.
So badass.
And then you can get some pretty sweet meat from it. You can get the high quality meat.
Can you get a pelt to cloak?
He could just go feral in mountains of the
that
north.
That would be amazing, right? There's clearly weapons that will, armor that changes your stats. So maybe it's plus stealth in winter or something like that.
I think, why it was colder was because it was at night too. So it was night and cold. And so I had my tunic and I was just eating curry or whatever.
Just scarfing down spicy food.
Yeah. And then after that, that's when I found my way down to the second town.
Yeah.
And that's basically where I'm at right now. It's still thousands of rupees away from buying the house. I don't have enough hearts. I'm not quite sure where to go. But I found more towers. I see them in the distance. Yeah. I was okay, maybe my next thing is just to do some mapping.
Man. So I think maybe what we should do is come back after we, defeat one of the mini-bosses, maybe? So
maybe we should
pick one and be like, let's do the water one or something, right? There's got to be one that's close by.
There must be, since we're probably starting to converge right now if we're...
Yeah, with the story and stuff. Yeah, because I think I'm supposed to go to, a research lab.
So I have that quest open... It's also hilarious that when you get off of the plateau, the quest is destroy Ganon.
Yeah.
okay.
Can you imagine? I just love that. That it's just go do this thing.
Apparently someone has finished the game in an hour.
Yeah, the speedrunners.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, they use the amiibo horse to just immediately get a horse.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have not opened up the amiibo power yet. I don't know what you can do.
It drops random items.
Okay. And all I have is
random items can save your fucking life if you're ever on this shitty island.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe we'll try to do one, maybe the water giant or something.
Whatever is closest to our area.
Because there's those four temples basically. And both of us have done zero so far.
Yep.
It's pretty wild. I had fairly high expectations for this, but it blew past those expectations.
Yeah. I had almost no expectations for this.
Yeah.
Until people were like, I've sold my baby for this.
Well, you kind of know why. I remember maybe it was last E3 or two E3s ago where we were kind of making fun of Nintendo because in their presentation of it, they said, see that mountain over there? You can go there. Which, I mean, we've been doing that since Elder Scrolls, you know, since...
But I was an asshole, I think, when it came to talking shit about Nintendo and Zelda.
But I mean, but now, that the way that they've done that in this game is just as impressive, if not more impressive, than something like Skyrim, where...
That's true.
It feels... there's an openness to it.
Yeah.
And at the same time, there is a purposefulness to it where you're not glitching up the side of a mountain. Like, if you see something, you can actually go there. Yeah.
But you might have to be clever about how you get there.
Yeah. And so I can see why they wanted to tout that, because they did something that felt different from GTA or something.
Totally. Yeah. I remember talking shit because they showed the footage and I was like, I don't know. It looks empty.
Yeah.
And it is empty.
Yep.
But now I see why.
Yeah.
And I feel foolish. I feel genuinely foolish saying that, because I think there was a certain implication and a certain...
Yeah.
There was a certain norm established by open world games. And you see it in like Horizon, where every time I try to have a one-on-one fight with a monster, there's like 50 other robots who want a piece.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's so frustrating.
Yeah.
But that is the norm when it comes to open world games.
Yeah.
And I was going into that with that baggage, right? Mm-hmm. And I think now I see the error of my ways and can realize like a lot of it is empty.
Yeah.
But it's empty because it wants you to take a breather and calm down and explore at your pace.
Yeah. There is a Shadow of the Colossus like purposefulness to this is just a large
and there
world.
Might be Colossi for all I fucking know.
Fuck, there's the crazy rock monster. You'll run into that at a certain point.
I'm sure there are people listening who are like 120 hours in
and like
those fools, wait until the entire continent stands
up.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You sweet children of summer.
Yeah.
So we'll probably check back in once we've done a temple. Maybe we'll try to do that water one, since it sounds like we're pretty close. And I don't know. Maybe by the next time we talk, I'll have 5 hearts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, my friend did come over with their Switch a while back, and they had like 30 hearts.
Jesus.
So clearly there are a lot of shrines in this game.
God damn. Well, I'll be interested to hear what everyone else has seen and done in this crazy world. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. We also need help fighting Ganon. It's Zelda and then us two.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of fucked up old machinery that sometimes comes to life and kills us instantly.
Dude, I was harvesting. I went to an area where there's like, it was like an empty battlefield of machines.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just harvesting them. And then one came alive and one shot me. I was like, okay, I'll just come back later. Give us a review on any of the platforms that you find podcasts and help us find new listeners.
Cool. We appreciate it. All right. Until next time, everyone. We will talk to you next week.
Bye. Every time we disagree, there's a place to go to.